Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
Kevin Pillar for the Giants swings at the first pitch, drives one deep left center field. Desmond going back. It is gone! And this game is scoreless no more. Kevin Pillar has done it again.
It's D-Mac, Chad Brown. You did it. Here we are, the weekend. I don't think there's any bomb cyclones in the forecast. I think it's going to be a little chilly this weekend. But look outside. Snow's, you know, more or less gone. And I hope you have a fantastic weekend. I believe Mark Schlereth and the Morning Show are up for a big award tonight, Chad. Well deserved.
Those guys are fun.
Yeah. I think Mike is on another ski adventure. Stink was already very snarky about the avalanche. I don't want to be that snarky, because being snarky about hockey is just not who I am. Apparently it's who Mark is. But it's all right. It's all right. I hope we bring home the bacon tonight. Hope we win all the awards that we can. I will not be there. Not invited this year, Chad.
I'm sorry.
To the awards thing. There was a time. Time has passed me by.
You can get it back, man.
I doubt it.
You can be back. You can do it.
But Johnny Love is getting all dressed up. He was giving us the lowdown about suspenders. And I think our guy Raj is going to be in attendance. And, of course, the great Bob Call will be representing our fantastic organization. So I'm sure we're going to do the awesome. No, I wasn't invited. It's okay, because why would I go if I'm not, you know, just be embarrassed.
Sour grapes over there?
No, bitter. Pay? No more bitter than sour. Yeah, it's a difference.
Okay, it is a difference.
During the Masters, Tiger Woods almost got de-cleated, literally, by a security guy. It looks like he's okay, and he's on a nice run. I believe they're on 18 now, so Tiger is, what, one behind the leaders at 6 under? Does he have a birdie putt? Oh, 17. They're on 17. Sorry, not quite on 18. Anyways, it's been exciting. Tiger almost got taken out by a security dude, and then he hit the ridiculous shot, and then the security dude almost took him out, and he went back-to-back birdies, and he's right there. So this weekend for the Masters should be, I mean, really, really exciting if Tiger Woods is within the final, you know, 2-3 groups, that's for sure.
Yep.
Should be awesome. You were hanging out at CU today, is that right?
Yeah, went up to the scrimmage they had today.
Who are they scrimmaging? Themselves, obviously.
Yes. Offense versus defense.
Was today the spring?
Spring game is not until the 27th.
Oh, okay.
This was a situational scrimmage. It was my first opportunity to get up to CU, see them practice.
How's LaViscus doing?
He is not practicing.
He's still?
He's doing stuff on the side. He's looking good.
What is his injury?
Lower leg something.
Yeah.
We saw what LaViscus can do when healthy, so I don't think the coaching staff is concerned.
I've seen mocks where he's a top 10 pick next year.
It is certainly possible. The skill set that guy is pretty incredible. To do what he did early on the season before he was nicked up was just so awesome to watch. But back to today, it was a situational scrimmage. He did some goal line work. He did some 1-minute work, some move the ball drills. Certainly a very fast tempo, very intense style practice. You can see why Mel Tucker, what he learned at Alabama, what he learned when he was at Georgia from those guys. And he's trying to bring a little bit more of a physical mindset to the Buffs. And for a team that hasn't played that way in a while, it's a bit of a learning process.
Okay.
But the intensity was there. I think he would say, if he was here with us, you know, he's looking to have that physicality go up a notch or two.
Okay. Can you tell a difference with Mel Tucker?
From a practice structure, I could, but it's hard to say, you know, watching one practice what the record's going to be this year and how they're going to be against the rest of the Pac-12. But the intensity and the physicality and the demands of the intensity and demands of physicality were certainly ratcheted up by that coaching staff.
By the way, I'm seeing in college football, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm seeing kids getting offers left and right these days, like right now, and offers going out to freshmen and sophomores and all sorts of craziness.
Yeah, I think, well, recruiting never, ever ends in college football.
But is there there's something about this time right now that is a little bit more active in the recruiting world?
Well, there's the early signing period. Now it's like a late signing period. I'm not sure how these windows and how big these windows are, but there were a couple of kids at practice today, possible recruits, so maybe they're local.
Yeah,
or something
I'm seeing
like
more like, you know, I'm getting offers, not I'm signing. It's like
I've been offered.
I've been offered. Yeah,
yes, I'm happy to receive my third offer. Yeah. That's happening. Yes.
God, it really doesn't end though, huh?
If you are a coach,
how do these coaches do it with freshmen and sophomores in high school?
It's a lot of time on your phone.
If you don't
texting these kids,
I mean, how do you know though? I mean, have these kids, you know, have you even played varsity level football as a freshman or sophomore?
But once you get that first offer, then the rest of them roll in. They go, oh, Ohio State offered them. Well, then we've got to offer them too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of typically how that rolls. And you hope these kids, you know,
how do you know?
You don't know.
You're giving offers to a 15-year-old freshman?
You saw him at some camp. You saw them at some quarterback clinic.
And you just guess, hey, maybe he can play?
He's got the size. Maybe he saw his older brother. Maybe some family familiarity.
Yeah, but how good are these offers anyway when they can be just taken off the table?
That's the tricky part.
It's kind of goofy, right?
And that's the part that, as I talk to college coaches, they don't love where this offer thing has gone.
Yeah, like percentage-wise, so in the 2019, well, it's not even the 2019 class. Let me just talk about like the 2021 class, right? Sophomores.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what I'm seeing kind of on social media. How many offers will a school actually make for, say, the 2021 class?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if they're limited, but I definitely know they make more offers than they have scholarships.
Well, that's where I'm going.
Because they assume some of those kids are not going to come.
30?
I don't know. Do you have 100 offers out there? I don't know.
You tell me.
I don't know.
So what's that offer really worth?
Yeah, and were you...
this is messed up to me, because I feel if you get an offer, that should be a commitment from that school no matter what. But it's not. It clearly isn't.
There is a long, long list of kids who get offers, something, you know, okay, fine, I'm ready to sign.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, that offer was from a month ago, and you didn't agree then, so now we've moved on to somebody else. My high school and youth best friend, his son was offered by CU. He said, you know, I'd like to look at a couple other schools, but I'm still certainly interested. You know, came back about a week before signing day, and CU had moved on. So he had to walk on to Washington and pay for
his... he was given that opportunity.
And pay for his, you know, his time at Washington. He earned a scholarship, and he'll play in the NFL next year. And it was CU's loss in the end. But that's how that thing goes down. If you get that offer and you want to entertain other schools, I don't think those offers still necessarily stand for you.
Okay. What a process.
It's
insane.
Some of it just needs to be reined in quite a bit.
How would you do it? What would you do?
I'm not exactly sure, but I would certainly limit the number of offers you could put out there so coaches just can't start offering kids. Hey, what was it? Lane Kiffin offered a kid in the eighth grade?
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane.
Well, I mean, what's the big difference between the eighth grade and the freshmen, the 2022s?
Right.
I've seen it. I saw it, like, over the past couple days.
I think there's a kid in the sixth grade who got offered. You know, it's just, it makes... So
I saw this kid who got offered, and he's like, small, like he's there next to a coach, and like it's like I'm so proud to get my offer from, you know, X, Y, and Z school, and he's like a little punk teenager. How do you know?
I would try to limit that somehow to make it not such a ridiculous game at this point, which is what it feels like from my side of it.
I mean, football's a fall sport. Why not make it you can't make any offers until December after your junior year? Just an idea. Seriously. Or would there be so many goofy ways people would try to get around that? It'd be ridiculous.
There's always going to be people who are going to try to avoid the rules. So that wouldn't change no matter what the rules are. You could have as many rules as you wanted. People are always going to try to wiggle around
them. Because there's probably no good way about it.
No. But again,
all right, yeah. Enough, whatever.
You shouldn't be able to offer anybody until a certain age, and you shouldn't have as an organization. If you've got 30 scholarships, you can't put out 100 offers.
It's funny. We were in our high school counselor office, and my son has a dream of playing NCAA baseball, and so the counselor is a great guy. Got out. Oh well, let's look at this sheet for NCAA eligibility. And so he breaks this out. He goes, well, it's, your GPA has to be so much, in line with your ACT. And, he breaks it out and it's like, oh, he's fine. Like, he's A-OK. And I said to my wife, I go, that's just NCAA eligibility. That's right. Got nothing to do with, like, actually getting into the school. This is just for all the dum-dums out there that are about to go to a school they should never be at. Because they have to draw the line somewhere with how many totally incompetent academic kids we're actually going to put in our school. So we've drawn up this, this absurd list of low standards to allow your kid into the school. It has nothing. So if you want to get in as like a walk on, you've got to get into the school. Like you got to get in.
Right.
If you're not this super stud,
well, you can be a preferred walk on. Well, They'll grease the academic sleds to get you in. Then you've got to try to find a way to earn a scholarship.
Yeah, we were at UC Santa Barbara, which has actually pretty good academic standards. And this guy's walking us around the campus. And he was a walk-on, so he gives you hope for everything. And one of the parents asked him, as a walk-on, how do you do academically to get into here? Because it's pretty tough. And he goes, oh, no, I mean, they know. Well, they'll get you in.
Well, this whole scandal.
We look around like there's 30 parents right there. We're all looking around each other. Like, don't tell us that. Like, we're desperately trying to get our kids to study and do better for themselves. And then this ding dong is telling us as long as you're good enough at baseball, you can just get in. And this was months before this whole college thing going on.
This admission scandal.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was the clearest way to get these kids admitted into school was to get them under the sports admission process.
Right.
To slide these kids into school.
Right. And then you just did it in sports nobody gives a care about, like crew.
Water polo.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Where's your water polo tape? What's your paddles per minute stroke rate? you get some. Even if you're at Stanford, you're a college coach. You probably only make like $60,000-$70,000 a year to coach, which of course is fine. But you go live in Palo Alto and tell me how $60,000 a year goes.
You can't live in Palo Alto.
Good luck.
You can't. Or Santa Clara.
Yeah, it's a little pricey.
You got to live like 2 hours away.
Right. So you may be a coach at Stanford, or you may want to have assistance, right? Like you may be trying to do something with your program. So you can see how, Lori Loughlin and the rest of the crew. By the way, is Lori Loughlin going to go away for like 13 years?
No.
Did I hear that? Yeah, I did see that. They offered her a plea deal. She was like, I'm not taking it seriously. And it got worse for her. Felicity Huffman, her thing is just cheating on like the test, I guess. She had somebody else like filling out the test. Apparently that's not as bad as like money laundering.
Money laundering is a big issue. Not only are you paying this guy to get your kid into school, but you're paying this guy's charity. You're writing it off on your taxes.
What a process, man. What a process.
You're like, you're doubly wrong.
Yeah, I told my wife, I'm like, this isn't to get into the school, honey. This is just to prove you're not just...
This is the minimum NCAA will allow you to compete with. That's all it is.
That's it.
Yeah.
This is really for the really great athletes. They would care about this.
Well, remember, they used to have...
Who are stupid.
When you and I were coming out of high school and going to college, they had the Prop 48 thing, where you could go to school, be on scholarship, but you couldn't play your first year because you didn't meet the NCAA standards.
Yeah.
Prop 48, that was
a thing. So here's what's happened over the years. There are just a ton of great athletes who are way over their head. I mean, just they should not be there. I mean, every day must be a nightmare for these kids because they're in a world they shouldn't be in. They're not ready for it. They don't know how to handle it. It's a disaster. But you make all these rules because you got to, you know, generate all this income. And
they do generate a lot of income.
Marshawn Lynch went to Cal.
Yeah. Marshawn's actually a sharp dude. Yes.
Okay, what was his ACT?
I have no idea.
Because he went to Cal.
Marshawn is a sharp, financially savvy
dude. I'll take your word for it. Tell me what his ACT was.
I have no idea. And we know the ACT, you know, does not necessarily measure your ability to manage your life.
You know, it's Cal Berkeley.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. I was recruited to Cal.
What was your ACT?
I took the SAT.
What was your SAT?
1,200.
That's phenomenal. That would be in the top 3% of Division I athletes in the state of California.
Now, my GPA wasn't so
good.
Who
cares? You were just lazy in high school, but you're smart.
I've been lazy my entire life.
That's what high test, low GPA means.
Yeah.
You are lazy.
I was lazy.
The end.
Yes.
High grades, low ACTs means you are taking easy classes for a high GPA. You're probably not that bright. Are these news flashes to parents out there?
I think so.
Yeah. But in lieu of bad tests, you may as well have a good GPA.
No, I did. I went the other way.
Yeah, but nobody cared because you were an awesome linebacker and you got a 1,200 on the. You know what I got on the? Took the SAT. I got 1050.
Nice.
I had a lot of extracurriculars going on.
I think I got 1070 my first time, and I was determined to crack 1,200. So I took it again.
I cracked over 1,000, and I heard it was good enough, and that was a wrap. I had a lot of other stuff going on.
Yeah, my GPA was not where it should have been.
Yeah, I was National Honor Society and all that stuff.
My mom pushed me into some advanced placement classes, yeah, and
I did all that.
With my flaky attendance record, that didn't pan out so well.
Flaky attendance record?
Yes.
What do you mean flaky? What were you doing?
Drinking 40s up at the local park.
In high school?
Yeah.
While you were an athlete?
That's what the cool athletes did in California. We went to the
Seriously?
Park and drank 40s.
During the day?
Well, if there was no practice or game, yes.
Oh, my God.
We were dumb.
What a nightmare.
Yeah.
All right. You were really good, though, huh?
I was a really good player.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I tried hard.
And a bit of a knucklehead.
Do you know how many captain's awards I won? Oh, yeah, Captain's Awards. This is a try-hard guy. Hey, let's hear it for the try-hard guy, everybody. Here he is, Mr. Try-hard.
And here I come walking in. Here's a guy who gives no effort in the classroom whatsoever.
You are my champion, D-Mac.
And the try-hard award winner for the sixth consecutive year, Darren McKee, come on up here, Darren. Collect your try-hard award. I was so sick of getting the try-hard awards by my senior year. I just stopped showing up. I was like, yeah, okay. Do you know what I really would have preferred to have, Chad?
Is it
the try-hard award? MVP. Yeah, no, we were not drinking 40s in Ipswich.
You guys didn't drink 40s?
Down by the Shote Bridge Pub.
We went to Laney's Liquor. They would let high school kids buy liquor there.
Oh, my God.
Went to the park, Farnsworth Park, and drank our 40s.
We did have the pit, which was this just hole in the woods in Ipswich that you just go to the pit on Friday night.
And do what?
And drink. It was stupid.
But you didn't drink? What did you drink?
Like, I didn't drink in high school. I did not drink in high school.
Not a single drop?
Nope. Did not. I was part of my extracurriculars. I was part of peer ed, which is like students against drunk driving. No, I didn't drink, didn't smoke, nothing.
Okay.
Zero.
All right.
Zippo.
Good for you.
Yep. Still proud of it to this day.
Yep.
CBS and Roto World joint mock draft. They've got the Broncos taking an offensive lineman in Andre Dillard.
He's from Washington State.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player.
What do you know about Andre Dillard?
He's good in the run, in the pass. Obviously, Washington State throws the ball well. He was a big part of their success, allowing their backs out of the backfield. They could be really dynamic in their passing game because their offensive line was good. But then people don't give Washington enough credit for the ability to run the football. This kid's actually a good run blocker as well. He's deserving to be drafted in the top 10 from a skill set standpoint. I'm not sure if he's the right pick for the Broncos, But again, this kid can play.
Well, here's an interesting mock, because it's got Devin White and Devin Bush and Drew Locke and TJ Hockenson all available, and they've got the Broncos going offensive line.
Well, they had Dwayne Haskins move up to number four with the Oakland Raiders taking him.
Yeah. I don't see it. I mean, because you've got to follow the bouncing ball here. And this is, if you're drafting a tackle, like, you're, okay, we're moving Garrett Bowles, like, tomorrow. I mean, the day after the draft, a guard. I don't see it. Because Ron Leary's committed, at least to this point. We'll see how he does during the season. And over in your right guard spots, I guess that could be open, I suppose.
Garrett Bowles would be a tremendous athlete for a guard. He would open up.
I just don't see it,
Chad. Get to the second level.
Devin White's available.
He can pull well. He'd be good in the screen game, getting downfield, picking up.
I can't go with it. I've you know, the more that I've thought about it, and I was high on Garrett Bradbury, for example. But you know what? I'm pushing off of that a little bit.
Why?
Because of Risner. Yeah. Because I think Risner just gives you, at the end of the day, more flexibility. And I think they're actually okay with Connor McGovern at center. And like we were talking about, if you want to make that move with Bowles into guard and put Risner out in tackle, you can do it. But you don't have to waste Risner. He can start playing right away at one of those guard spots.
But if you go with Bradbury, because of his speed, that really changes things of what you can do. You know, I played with Damani Dawson, Hall of Fame center with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. And because of his speed, it allowed us to do so many different things offensively that other teams simply could not do. And defenses were not prepared for a center who could pull, a center who could get to the second level. That changes a lot with your offensive line.
I've just seen, like, Risner, too, by the way, fall in the second round kind of in a variety of different mocks. I've seen him in the first round for sure. Maybe I'm influenced by the fact we talked to him and his whole, you know, Colorado story here. But I think I'm more moved by the flexibility he offers you, and it just seems so unlikely to me that they're going to dump Garrett Bowles right away. And I think if you can get Risner in the second round, why exactly would you be dumping Bowles right away? I don't quite get it. So to me, Dillard just doesn't make a lot of logical sense under the circumstances they are, unless they really just hate Garrett Bowles. And I don't think they do hate Garrett Bowles. I think they are curious what Mike Munchak can do with Garrett Bowles. So I think Garrett Bowles, Chad, I feel it. He gets one more year because of Munchak. If Munchak wasn't here, maybe. But I do believe they think Munchak can get something out of anybody and everybody.
What if Munchak watched the tape and said, I can't do anything with this guy?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. If they get Andre Dillard, I will assume that that was the conversation they had. So, again, I'm not really against, like, whatever move they make, I will understand why they did it. There's hardly any, like, the one I just cannot come to terms with.
Is Hockenson.
I just don't get it. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around it. It just doesn't seem to make sense based on who else is around and will be available. And I just don't get it.
I tried yesterday. I won't try again today. I'm trying to convince you. That's fine.
There's other guys, though. There's a lot of other guys. Details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
For the weekend, D-Mac with Chad Brown. You do anything?
This weekend?
Yeah.
I can't tell you. It'll bum you out.
No. I'll be all right. I'll be good. What are you doing?
Last weekend. Yeah, I've got 7 brothers and sisters. One of my brothers passed last weekend.
Oh.
So I'm going to California for the memorial service.
Oh. Now you bum me out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know what? He was sick. His health was failing. And, you know, when you don't have somebody close to you pass, when people say things like, well, at least he's no longer in pain, it always felt very corny and canned and hokey. But then when you do see your brother in pain and he's in the hospital bed and he's got all the tubes connected to him, and then you realize, oh, that is not corny. It really does make you feel better that my brother's no longer suffering.
Now, my mom was one of seven as well.
Mm-hmm.
And just to keep it real, she's closer to some of her brothers and sisters than others. And she had a brother pass, and, you know, she wasn't happy about it, but it actually wasn't all that upsetting either. What was your relationship like with this particular brother?
So this brother, we shared a room until he moved out to move to his wife. So he was the, of my seven siblings, he's the one I had the closest relationship with.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and we're going back to the memorial service. It'll be a great, joyous event. He had a tremendous life. He spread a lot of love and joy. Looking at pictures last night, it was hard to find a picture of him where he wasn't smiling. Mm. And, you know, I didn't want to jump on air and bring all this up and bum people out. But, you know, just as a takeaway, you know, call your brother, call your sister, call your family. Be tight with them. You know, life is not promised, and tomorrow's not promised. So enjoy what you can. I was actually lucky. I was out in California at an NFL event, and we had that bomb cyclone, and I couldn't fly back. But that gave me the opportunity to go visit my brother.
You give me chills a little bit.
Yeah, the next weekend when he passed, at least it made me feel like, okay, wow, that storm happened maybe for a reason, and that flight was canceled for a reason, and I got this chance to see my brother before he was back in the hospital bed not looking so good.
Is this your first sibling to pass?
Yes.
How do you think your family's going to react?
Well, we were all there last weekend.
Everybody.
Two siblings didn't make it out.
I was going to say, it must be unusual or difficult for everybody to be in the room at the same time.
Yeah, everyone will be at the memorial service, but a majority of people were there at the hospital, you know, when he passed and all of that. So there was, that feeling of, you know, this is awful, this is terrible, no one's happy about this, mm-hmm. but he's not in pain anymore. Mm-hmm. He's not going to struggle anymore. And later that night, we had a chance to go to his house, and I saw my sister-in-law. She was bouncing my new little baby niece. My youngest brother had a child a couple months ago. And just thought, okay, you know, this is how life works. Unfortunately, people pass. We have other family members have babies, and the circle of life goes on. We lost one, but we gained another. Mm. And to see the smile on her face with my niece after seeing her tears at the hospital earlier that day, it just felt like a little bit like a corny movie montage.
Mm-hmm.
And that song, What a Wonderful World, is playing in the background and makes you cry and makes you smile at the same time kind of mm-hmm. thing. It was one of those kind of surreal moments of, wow, just a couple of hours ago, we were broken down, knees buckling, crying.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're here sharing stories, mm-hmm. passing this little baby around and just enjoying family and the gift of life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was a real surreal moment. But knowing that I've got, you know, seven other brothers and sisters, and I'm the second youngest of the eight,
hmm.
this is unfortunately going to happen again, you know?
Inevitably.
Yeah.
How's mom and dad handling things? How old are your parents?
My dad is 83.
Same as my dad. Okay.
Now, my mom is 71.
And my mom's 73. Look at that. Robin the Cradle action.
Yeah,
our dads in the mom situation.
Yeah, and with the eight kids, my dad was a bit of a Rolling Stone, three different babies, mamas kind of thing.
Gotcha.
He settled down with my mom, and they were together my entire life. But as you would guess, you know, having the first child pass is definitely tough for everybody. But again, I think everyone had the sentiment of he struggled with his health for so long, and it became clear that there was no real path out of this. You're never happy to see someone go, but you're happy he's no longer in pain.
All right. Well, I wish you well. And hopefully there's more optimism and joy from seeing family
mm-hmm.
and a good solid remembrance of somebody who was obviously pretty special for you. So have a good weekend. I did not know that was coming, obviously. Makes it impossible to transition right into Broncos possible draft picks. So let's just cleanse our palate a little bit, take a break. And we'll get to that coming up next.
No sleep till!
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Chad Brown, D-Mac, we still cannot get over the Tiger Woods incident from earlier today where a security guard stupidly just plowed Tiger Woods' right ankle. Lucky he didn't take out his knee. And Tiger birdied two holes on 14 and 15, par at 16, and then he missed two birdie putts, very makeable birdie putts, at 17 and 18 to finish so far on Thursday and Friday at 6 under, one shot off the lead. So he easily, Chad, could have been 8 under and been in the lead by himself had he made those two very makeable birdie putts on 17 and 18. So that's all good. Sets up for, he'll be in one of the final groups tomorrow and hopefully on Sunday as well.
Looking forward to seeing him in his, you know, his Sunday Masters red mock turtleneck, classic imagery Nike does every year. It's always a cool look.
Yeah, should be pretty cool. Okay, let me go through some of these guys that the Broncos have brought in so far. Dremont Jones.
Draymond,
that's what I said. Out of Ohio State, who's a 3-4 defensive end, 6'2 and a half, 281. What do you know about him? This is a mid-round pass rusher, I guess.
More of a DN, more of an edge kind of guy. Not a truly dynamic pass rusher. Only 10 sacks with his last two seasons, so not great pass rushing numbers. You know, played well at Ohio State, played well when Bosa, you know, decided to call it a year. I've seen him play over the last couple of years. He's not a world beater.
All right, well, let me team him up then with Kingsley Kiki?
Kingsley Kiki.
From Texas A&M, who is almost the same type of player. 3-4 DN, 6'2 and a half, 288.
Saw him play.
Same type of guy, right?
Yeah, same type of guy. Saw him play against Clemson earlier in the season. And saw Texas A&M play Alabama later in the season. Yeah, a edge setter, decent run player, not a dynamic pass rusher. Has a range of pass rush moves, but neither one of these guys are particularly, you know, great. They're not early.
So we're looking for round depth. Talents. We're looking for depth behind Gotsis, Derek Wolf.
Yeah,
that's what it says to me.
Look
right
at this right up here. Kiki is as a fourth round projection. And that's part where I see him at. I think Draymond Jones is a better player. Maybe could slide into late second, third round.
Okay. But either way, the Broncos are maybe making a move later in the draft for support behind Derek Wolf and Adam Gotsis.
I think if you're going to have a 3-4 system, you're going to need at least 6 to 7 defensive linemen. That's the position group that actually rotates the most out of any group on the field.
Gotsis, Wolf, Harris, Kerr.
Walker, maybe.
Do we?
Maybe. It's a new staff.
Bueller?
It's a new staff. They may give him another look.
He's not cut yet.
Right.
So, he was a second-round pick who will be on his third year of barely playing football. So, maybe. We'll see.
It has to happen this year.
Oh, no doubt about it, because the Broncos are already looking for guys for depth at that position. Mm-hmm. Then we go with Dalton Risner. We've been over him a million times. Drew Lock, quarterback, fine. I think it's interesting to see Deebo Samuel. These are guys that have already been brought here. Now, this is Emmanuel Sanders. 5'11", 214, just this dynamic, electric, touchdown sort of machine. Second, third round sort of guy. That's Emmanuel Sanders, right?
Yeah, return skills. I think a little thicker than Emmanuel, a little bit bigger body, but same type of player. He brings a good skill set to the position, and again, he can return kicks and punts.
We know that they, you know, Elway at least, you know, spend an extra day down in Arizona to look at N'Keal Harry. Wide receiver as a desirable position. Where do you think that is on their radar?
I think they got to try to find a slot guy some way, somehow. It's a tricky position, I think, for a college guy to make that transition to first year and expect some great results. But your passing game is going to be limited if you don't fill that role some way, somehow.
Because right now that guy is Deshaun Hamilton. It's not Emmanuel, is it?
I don't think coming off the Achilles, that's the best way to get the most out of him. That's such an intricate footwork position. It would seem like it'd be a tough way to come back from that injury.
If they signed a guy like Deebo Samuel, what it would tell me is we're fine with Emmanuel this year, but most likely will probably part ways after this year. And we're getting ready for that sort of depth, that sort of dynamic receiver. And I think you can go in a couple different directions. You could go with the bigger possession sort of guy. But the Broncos seem to be okay in that department with Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick. See, to me, Deshaun Hamilton's not really a small guy. I don't think of Deshaun Hamilton like that. Do you?
I don't really see him as a true slot kind of guy.
No, I don't either. He's more like a possession type of receiver, but I don't know if it's out of the slot. I actually kind of don't know where Deshaun Hamilton fits, to be honest with you.
He's not a big body outside guy. He's not a Cortland Sutton. He's not a Julio Jones. He's not a burner, and he's not a true slot guy.
But the best thing that hit him in Penn State, he just caught everything thrown his way.
Very capable guy in college. And we didn't see a whole lot of that last year. We saw some great effort making blocks downfield. We saw a guy who was invested in the game.
But he's another one of these red flag guys because he didn't come out early. He was a four-year guy, and he was a mid-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
Usually these guys that are this talented, they don't go all 4 years. They do come out early. But he's not one of them. It's not like I think poorly of Deshaun Hamilton. I just don't know how special or where he really fits.
I don't think you necessarily need to be special. We talked about the wide receiver room over the last couple of days. We talked about having guys that can fill all the roles and run all the routes as a group, not one guy who can do it all. Maybe he's the blocking guy. He certainly showed he's more than willing and capable last year. But part of that, if that opens up, if you're the blocking guy and people expect you to always block, now you're a weapon in the play action game. Act like you're going to block. Run past somebody, run your route. That makes you effective.
They have had a cornerback in, Chris Boyd, and I would bet they have probably four or five cornerbacks in, because you just can never have too much depth there. So I don't want to look that deep into it. His name is Chris Boyd out of Texas. I think we'll know much more with what they do in the first three rounds at the cornerback position, Chad. But, it's corner. You got to bring guys in.
Yep.
So I don't look. You got to just bring guys in every year. The tight end position, Noah Fant has been here, and we know they're interested in Josh Oliver. Well, these are two very different type of tight ends, Chad, it seems to me. Noah Fant is more like that George Kittle sort of thing, and Josh Oliver is more of a thumper sort of guy. Where are you seeing their need at tight end?
They need a tight end. I think that room is the weakest position group on the Broncos. They've got to do something to shore up that room. I saw Fumagalli play at Wisconsin. He was more than a capable blocker and receiver. But that's not going to be enough when you got question marks about Hyerman's ability to be available. And then who knows what's going to happen with Jake Butt. So I think Noah Fant and Hawkinson are going to go so early. And if you're anti-tight end as you are, then that's just far too early for you. I think you can get value guy later on in the draft who won't have the same upside, who won't be as dynamic, but can more than fill that role as a occasional target and the tight end.
All I can say is if they do go tight end early, first two rounds, and I mean, I do understand it, that guy's got to be a star kind of right away. I don't want to see this guy being hurt. I don't want to hear excuses about why it's not working out. I mean, right away, we better see something special because I just think you can get a more serviceable guy a little bit deeper. So I'm okay with it. I get it. But let's make that guy should be a star. That guy should be as Cortland Sutton was to the tight end position this year. It's okay that you're not a superstar right away, but can't you see those moments with Cortland Sutton? Don't you see where that could go? This guy better be like that.
Well, then, again, if you're going to draft either one of these guys, Fant or Hawkinson, then they've got to be a feature part of your offense. It can't just be an occasional thing.
Yes.
If you're going to invest that kind of draft capital, you need to shift your offense to where this guy is getting, 65, 70 targets a year.
Right. And if it's not, if it's 35 to 40 catches,
then you then draft it too high. Then.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
Okay. Javon Patterson. This dude is like a guard. This is like the guard's interior guard. 6'2.5", 307. This is just a brick wall sort of guy. Where they invest in offensive linemen is going to be fascinating this year's draft. But they're taking somebody, right?
Yeah, they have to. They have to. It's too expensive to go the free agency route. You have to draft offensive linemen every year because it's the cheapest way to get them. And that position is a technician position. You have to learn as you go.
So who aren't we talking about? We're not really talking about safeties anymore.
No.
We're not talking about running backs.
No.
I don't think we're really talking about tackles. I think we're talking about guard, center, that sort of thing.
Depending on what mock you look at, you know,
I know.
The tackle thing is still out there.
I think that, but these are guys the Broncos are actually brought in.
True.
You know, this is not just crazy. They haven't brought in Andre Dillard. That's just speculation. They have brought in Javon Patterson.
Well, they didn't talk to Bradley Chubb at all, so who knows what'll happen.
Exactly.
He's fixing to find out.
Richie, thank you, my man. Thank everybody for listening. Let's go Nuggets. Let's go Avs. Rockies, can we score a run?
Tiger, do something this weekend, man.
How about Tiger?
Get us excited.
Dude, I love it. This is The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.